be there for 10 years. So in this particular journal, I contributed two articles. One is my own, and the other is based on Rav Soloveitchik. So we were discussing the Ramban. The Ramban shita is that if you have a mitzvah that lends itself to shlichus, you make a bracha with an al. If you have a mitzvah that cannot be fulfilled vicariously through any agency, that you have to do it yourself, then the bracha is with a lamed. And the Ramban's example of this is tkiyas shofar. He says the mitzvah of shofar is shmiya, to hear the shofar, and it's not possible to send a shliach to hear the shofar for you. You have to hear it yourself. And therefore, the bracha is lishma kol shofar. So the Ramban now asks himself the following kasha. Why is it that the bracha for Megillah is al Mikra Megillah? After all, Mikra Megillah, like shofar, is a mitzvah of shmiya. And if the mitzvah shmiya is, I can't have anyone do it to replace me, and if I have to hear it myself, the bracha should have been lishmoa es hamegila, not al. And the Ramban gives the following answer, that in the case of shofar, the mitzvah is only shmiya. In the case of Megillah, the mitzvah is not only shmiya, but it's also kriya. And kriya means that you have to be the korei. When someone reads on your behalf, you become the korei, and that's called shlichus. And yesterday we asked the question, that's not shlichus at all, that's called shomei ka'ona. It's as if you read it yourself. So in other words, the Ramban really hasn't answered his question by introducing kriya into the equation, because that doesn't make it into a mitzvah of shlichus. Kriya is not a shlich. It's not that you read on my behalf and I appoint you as my agent. It means that I hear your kriya. So normally, if you ever want to test a halacha to see whether it's shlichus or not, then all you have to know is whether the mshalech is there or he's not there. If the mshalech is on the other side of the world, then you know that the shliach is operating on his behalf as a shliach. But in the case of Mikra Megillah, I can't send you to read the Megillah on the other side of the world. I have to be there to hear the Megillah. So if I have to be there to hear the Megillah, it means I personally need the kriya, and I'm considered the korei through the principle of what? Shomea ka'ona. So Rav Soloveitchik offered the following answer. He wanted to suggest that maybe the Ramban holds that there's a din of tzibur with regard to Mikra Megillah. For example, the Vilna Gaon is famous for saying that on the Mishnah Masechta Sofrim, the Brisa Masechta Sofrim says that when you read all five Megillos, each one respectively on its holiday, its appropriate holiday, you make a bracha asher kitshon mitzosav tzivano al Mikra Megillah. What does the Gaon say? The Gaon says that whenever we read a Megillah of the five Megillahs publicly, that's called a Kiyum Tzibur. It means that we have to read from the Megillahs in front of the Tzibur. And whenever the Tzibur is gathering together to do a Kriya B'Tzibur, then the Korei is the Shliach on behalf of the entire Tzibur. So each person is Yotze through the kriya of the tzibur when the balkore reads it on behalf of the tzibur. That's called shlichus. That's not exactly shlichus, but it's similar to shlichus, because whenever the tzibur is putting together one action on behalf of the entire tzibur, that kriya of ksuvim on behalf of the tzibur, that's called a shlichus halacha. So that's what we discussed yesterday. Today I want to discuss with you sfiras haomer. The Ramban says that Sfiras HaOmer Mevarchim Ba'al. Now this is a pella. Sfiras HaOmer is a classical case of a mitzvah that I have to fulfill myself. The Torah says, Usfartem Lachem, and the Sifra says, Shetehei Sfir L'Kol Echad V'Echad. I can't appoint you as my agent to account Sfira for me. I have to do it myself. So the Ramban says the following. Usfiras haomer mevarchem bi'al mipnei shekvar nikrav haomer. The omer has already been brought. Vehem monim mimenu velo monim lo. In other words, we're not counting towards the future what's going to happen down the line, but rather we're counting towards the past. It's sort of like Sfiras haomer is a bridge between the Havas HaOmer on the 16th of Nisan and the Shtei Alechem, which is brought on Chag HaShavuos. So again, let's read the Ramban's language once more. He says, Hod mevarchem b'Sfiras HaOmer al, mipnei shekvar nikrav HaOmer, v'heim monim mimenu, v'lo monim lo. Yisroel l'takein al, that the bracha should be al Sfiras HaOmer, V'chein nagu, and that's the minhag, he says. Now, I don't get it. Havas HaOmer is a mitzvah on the 16th of Nisan, then there's a mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. Those are two separate mitzvahs. So even if you'll tell me that the Havas HaOmer already took place, and I'm counting after the Havas HaOmer, but nevertheless, this is a mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer that I cannot fulfill through a shliach. And according to the Ramban, the only reason we shift the bracha from a lam into an al is because of shlichus. Where's the shlichus here in Sfiras HaOmer? So Rav Soloveitchik wanted to suggest the following, that Hakrovas HaOmer and Sfiras HaOmer are not two separate independent mitzvahs, but rather is one mitzvah. The mitzvah is A, to be makriv the Omer, and B, to count from the Omer. And that's what the Ramban means when he says umonim mimenu. In other words, there's a havas HaOmer, which means we bring the Omer as a korban, and then monim mimenu. That's all part of the Hakrovas HaOmer. We are fulfilling the end part, the continuation of Havas HaOmer by counting the Omer. So in other words, if the Omer was just simply a bridge between the 16th of Nisan and the 6th of Sivan, then it would be monim Elov. It wouldn't be monim mimenu. The fact that Ramban says monim mimenu means we're not counting the future days, which will culminate with Shtei Alechem on Chag HaShavuos, because then the bracha would not be with a lamed, but rather we're counting the days that passed. How many days have passed since the Omer was brought? And therefore, as soon as you're doing a mitzvah which relates to the past, then the bracha shifts from a lamed to an al. Now here, Rabbo, so we're breaking new ground. Until this point, the Ramban only had one principle. The issue of whether or not you make a bracha with a lamed or an al hinges upon whether the shlichus, there is no shlichus. There's no shlichus with a lamed, if there is shlichus with an al. Now we're adding another element into the equation. The lamed or the al depends upon whether you're talking about what's going to come in the future or what you already did in the past. What's the classic example of this? From our sugya in Pesachim Daf Zayin, the case of Netilas Lulav. The Gemara says, why do we make a bracha al Netilas Lulav? And the Gemara answers, by activating the principle of Mida Agvi Nafik Bey, that already when he picked it up, he was Yotze the Mitzvah. So now we have another reason in the Gemara why we shift from Lama to an Al. Any Mitzvah that already began, and I'm just adding something to the Mitzvah, I make the bracha with an Al. So in the case of Netilas Lulav, Mid Agbe Nafik Bey, again, I might anticipate Nanuim and so forth. I could add and embellish the mitzvah, but the bulk of the mitzvah is already passed. Now, if Hakrovas HaOmer and Sfiras HaOmer is one long mitzvah, then by the time I get to the Sfiras HaOmer, I've already done the bulk of the mitzvah. It's already behind me. That's what the Ramban means, monim mimenu. Mimenu meaning past, in the past tense, that which was already done, namely the Havas HaOmer. So on both sides, what would you say, according to the Ramban, about Sfiras HaOmer Bizman HaZeh? We don't have what? The Hakrovas HaOmer. We don't have the Beis HaMikdash. Then by definition, according to the Ramban, the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer would have to be Durabanan. It would be a Zecher LeMikdash. It could not be the original mitzvah Doraisa. Because according to Ramban, the mitzvah of Sfira is a package deal. It's a culmination of the mitzvah of Havas HaOmer, but we don't have Havas HaOmer. So therefore, the only way the Ramban could explain our Sfira HaOmer today is with Zecher LeMikdash. Now, do we have a precedent for a mitzvah that's Zecher LeMikdash, and we make a bracha because it's Zecher LeMikdash?
Sure,
Chanukah. Well, I don't know about Chanukah. Chanukah is not Zecher LeMikdash, but what's the classical case of, the classic case of Zecher LeMikdash? Lulav, right? Lulav. Because as far as the Torah is concerned, you take the lulav when? Ulekachim lechem biyomar rishon. But in the Beis HaMikdash, there was a mitzvah of usmachtim lefnei Hashem akechem shivas yomim. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, after the Churban, established the takana that we should take the lulav all 7 days, mishum zecher lemikdash. And yet we make a bracha on it. So the Ramban could quote that as a paradigm for Sfiras HaOmer. That in Sfiras HaOmer, on a Doraisa level, you needed the Omer itself, Havas HaKorban. we only have a Zecher LeMikdash. She'll ask me, why do we make a bracha? And the answer is because we make a bracha on Zecher LeMikdash. Where do we find that we make a bracha on Zecher LeMikdash? Where the Gemara explicitly says it's Zecher LeMikdash. You know, Ner Chanukah, maybe we could fit it into a balafar, but in the Gemara itself, Lulav Kol Shiva is Zecher LeMikdash, and yet we make a bracha, Asher Kitchan Mitzvosav. So the Ramban has something to stand on. You know, his feet are well grounded here, because Sfiras HaOmer, according to the Ramban, is a mitzvah that requires a bracha. And it's very interesting, because the bracha in both cases of lulav as the paradigm of Zecher LeMikdash and Sfiras HaOmer as the Ramban's Kiddush, both have the nusach of al. But again, you could argue for two different reasons. You could have said, well, Al, the Gemara says, because I'm an Agbi Nafik, but in Sfiras HaOmer, I should make the bracha with a Lamed, because I'm about to count the Omer. So I need a Lashon of Lahava. But the answer is, according to Ramban, that the Sfiras HaOmer is counting the days from the Omer. Again, we're going to remember the Omer as if we brought the Omer. We don't have the Omer, but we remember the Omer, and we're counting the days on which, had the Mikdash stood, we would be the beyond the Omer.
The Ramban is Minyan HaMitzvahs. Counts as one mitzvah?
Excellent question. I don't know. The Rambam has it as two mitzvahs. The question is, did the Ramban combine the two? You know, you see, what we have from the Ramban is what's called mitzvahs shehishmiton HaRambam. The Ramban, as far as I know, never tells you, once you add mitzvahs, how do you subtract mitzvahs? But you're right. Joseph is right. This might be an occasion in which the Ramban could drop a mitzvah.
But if we hold by the Ramban, we would say Be'omer instead of Lo'omer.
Oh yeah? Why is that?
Because, as you say, it's...
La'omer could mean to the counting of the days of the Omer, meaning to the counting of the days that followed the bringing of the Omer. So La means to the Sphira. It doesn't mean to the Shtel Lechem. It means we're counting the days of the Sphira. And the sphere itself is made karamashra, it's on the pair.
So it wouldn't matter whether you hold the Ramban with the right
side? Well, that's a different question. The Ravid sheet, if you recall, is that on any mitzvah the Ramban, we make a brach with an al. We don't know that the Ramban bought into that sheet. In fact, when the Ramban deals with Lahadlik Ner Chanukah, you remember he works overtime to try to figure out that Hishtatfus with Pruta, it's not really Shlichus, it's a different halacha, he's the Madlik himself. Why did the Ramban have to work overtime to justify the Bracha Lahadlik? He just could have said, maybe it's a Mitzvah Ramban. So Ramban doesn't seem to have this distinction. Or, for example, Al Mikra Megillah. He says Al Mikra Megillah is because the Mitzvah is Kriya. Why do you have to introduce the Mitzvah of Kriya? Why don't you just say it's a Mitzvah the Rabban? Now, Sfiras HaOmer, according to the Ramban, is no doubt Zecher LeMikdash, so it's only the Rabban. But that's not enough to justify, according to the Ramban, why the bracha takes on an al. Because in Sfiras HaOmer, the Ramban says it takes on an al, not because it's the Rabbanon, but because there's an extra kiyum of kriya, if you recall. So why does Sfiras HaOmer get an al? And the answer says the Ramban is because you're not counting towards, you're counting in the past. I mean, what days have passed from the Omer? So Rav Soloveitchik wants to offer another explanation as to why the bracha on Sfiras HaOmer is al, alternative to the Ramban. He says the following: Mitzvah sasfira eina miskayemes ad shegomer lispar as kol amem tes yom. The Torah commands us to count 49 days, and you don't fulfill the mitzvah until you get to the 49th day. So when you're counting the first day, he cannot be mevarech on the chovas agavra. If you remember, we always said over and over again that lamed means I'm obligated, and with this action I'm fulfilling my obligation. That's the lamed. You cannot apply that to Sfiras HaOmer. Why? Because even if he completes his sfira of this day, he's still obligated to count all the other days until they finally integrate to form one whole of 49 days. That's when he's mekayim the mitzvah. And therefore, the bracha can't be on the Chovas Gavra, because this act of sphere that I'm about to implement is not a kiyum of my Chovas Gavra. So therefore, the bracha has to take on a broader scope, and that's called the Cheftza Shel Mitzvah. And therefore, the bracha now is with an al instead of a lamed. So again, as we mentioned, we spoke about this when you remember when we started the sugya of Albir Chometz, that Bir Chometz is a two-part mitzvah. You remember? It's first looking for the Chometz and then finding and destroying the Chometz. So therefore the Al indicates a broader scope. The Lamed would indicate that right now I'm about to clinch the mitzvah. I'm about to fulfill my mitzvah. In Sphere Saomer, if you hold that all 49 days are necessary, meaning it's all one unit, and you only clinch this mitzvah when you implement the last sphere of the 49th day, then it's impossible to make a bracha with a lamed, because lamed indicates that this is my kiyum mitzvah. I put on my tefillin, I put on my tzitzis, I sit in the sukkah, I have now fulfilled my mitzvah. So I can make a bracha on the asiyah, which is a kiyum of the chofetz gavra. In the case of sphere some, I can't do this, because this sphere is not a kiyum of the chofetz gavra. So I remember after Shir, I asked the Rav a question. I don't remember what he answered me, but I remember the question. You see, that's it. We remember our own things. So I asked him, well, why don't we make a bracha with a lamed on the 49th sphere when we get to the 49th, because that itself will clinch the theme. So I don't remember what he answered me. Something technical, I think he said. Anyway, that's what I wanted to say. But also, I'm going to take a minute break just to... So you may recall that the Mishnah establishes that if you don't know that the chulda went in there with chametz, then you're okay. And the Gemara points out that time of the lo chazina the shakal, you didn't see with your own eyes that the chulda went into the house with a piece of chametz. Lo chazina the shakal, you cannot rely on your bedika anymore if you already saw that there's chametz going into the house. Right, the establishment of a makom she'ein bo chametz through bedika cannot be considered an accomplishment if you see in front of you that chametz is going into the house. So the Gemara immediately asks, well, why not assume that the chulda that brought the chametz into the house also consumed the chametz? And in fact, the Mishnah at the beginning of Olos, the Mishnah in the 18th parak of Olos, establishes that although the Chazal made a gzera that we discussed at great length yesterday called Maduras Akum, but nevertheless, if it's Makom Shechulda V'chazu Yicholim Lahalech L'Sham, Ein Tzarech Bedika, which means that we have every right to assume that the Chulda would have eaten up the flesh of the Nefel in this case, and there's no longer Tum over there, and a Kohen would be allowed to enter into the house. So you see that even though we assumed initially that there was a Nefel buried under the floor of the apartment, but nevertheless that Nefel is gone insofar as the Chulda consumed the Nefel. Why not assume the same thing in the case of a Chulda that brought Chametz into the house? So Rav Zeira makes a distinction between Basar and Lechem. So this you'll see if you're on Daf Tesamen Aleph about 10 lines down from the top. Omer Rav Zeira, Lo Kasha. Habe basar v'habe lechem. You want to talk about a chulda, then you can differentiate between flesh and bread. But basar lo mishaira, in the case of basar, we can assume that there was nothing left. The animal would have consumed the entire flesh. But belechem, in the case of bread, like in the case of chametz that we discussed, where the chulda took chametz into the house, we don't have the right to assume that the chulda would have completely consumed all the lechem. Mishaira means it leaves over. And that is what's going on over here. So yesterday, you may remember that we discussed the Tosfos Divrei Maskil Kol Makom, and we established that in the case of a Kohen, he's allowed to enter into Mador Shel Akum in Chutz Lartz, even if there's no Chulda. So this whole discussion about a Chulda that's going to remove the status of this house as a Mador Shel Akum and the assumption of Tumah, it all applies only in Eretz Yisrael. This whole enterprise called Mador Shel Akum, and a Kohen's not allowed to enter into there because we assume there's a Nefel there, unless there's Chulda, that doesn't apply to Chutz Lartz. In Chutz Lartz, they never established Madoras Akum. That was the bottom line of the Re in Tosfos Divrei Maskil Kol Makom. Omar Rava, this is where we were holding since yesterday. Hi, Mai. That's an interesting Talmudic phrase. Hi, Mai. Meaning, what are you talking about? What kind of question are you asking? What analogy is there between the Mishnah in Olos and our Mishnah here in Pesachim? Bishlei Mahasam, in the case of Maduris Akam, I understand very well why Chulda removes the need for checking and finding the Nefel, meaning that if the Chulda is there, you could assume that there's no Nefel there. That's because from the get-go, it was only a Suffolk. We never knew that there was a Nefel there. Nobody saw a Nefel buried under the floor. Amar Hava, maybe you could say there was a Nefel there. Amar Lo Hava, maybe there was no Nefel there. So there's never Tumah there to begin with. So the whole enterprise here, Maduris Akum, is built on a Suffolk. And if you have another Suffolk to counter that Suffolk and balance against that Suffolk, then that's exactly what you'll do. V'im Timsa Lo Mar Hava. The Mishnah established that even if you're going to tell me, well, maybe in fact there is a Nefel buried there, Emer Achalte, I could also suggest that the Chulda consumed the Nefel. So you start with an assumption which is questionable, it's a Suffolk, and therefore you can end the discussion with another Suffolk, because one Suffolk is just as powerful as the other, and it removes the Suffolk. So you had a 50% chance, let's say, that there was a Chulda, that there was a Nefel there. Now you have a 50% chance that the Chulda would have consumed the Nefel. When you put the two together, then you assume that there is no Nefel there. For two reasons. Either because there was never a Nefel to begin with, or because if there was a Nefel there, it was already taken away, it was already consumed. Aval Hacha, but here, in the case where you personally witnessed that you were an eyewitness to the Chulda going into the house with Chametz, Vadai Chazina Deshakal, we know for sure that the Chametz went into the house. Now you're telling me, well, maybe the Chulda ate the Chametz. Miyemar the Achalte. Shall we say that it ate the house? Well, maybe we'll say it ate the Chametz. Maybe now we'll say it didn't eat the Chametz. You know, so whatever you argue, I can argue the opposite. And that's called, in Rava's language, Havisafek Uvadai. We start with a Vadai and we end with a Safek. V'yein Safek Motzi Midei Vadai. The Suffolk that the animal would have eaten up the Chametz is not powerful enough to undermine and remove the Vadai that there was Chametz in the house. Okay. Now, Rabosai, on this Gemara, we're going to have a major machlokus here between Rashi and Tosfos. Let's just summarize the machlokus. Rashi is going to assume that the Bodek in our Mishnah fulfilled all his responsibilities, which means Bittel as well, because we have a Gemara back on Daf Dalet that says HaBodek Tzorch Yevatel. So it means that we're talking about a person who already implemented Bittel. Now what happens when a person makes Bittel? What happens to the Bedikah after Bittel? It gets reduced from one level to another. From what level to what level? If he hadn't done Bittul, then it's a problem of what? Bal Yiro Bal Yimotze. That's a Doraisa. But once he does Bittul, the Torah says, as the Gemara says earlier, Daf Dalet, B'Doraisa B'Bittul Ba'alma Sagile. So he has fulfilled his requirement on a Doraisa level. The entire enterprise of Bedika now becomes the Rabbanon. And yet, according to Rashi, despite the fact that the Bedika is the Rabbanon, the Gemara is not going to rely on a Suffolk that maybe the weasel ate the Chametz. That's not going to exempt you from Bedika. Tosis, on the other hand, says, wait a minute, if he already made Bittul, then the whole deal is the Rabbanon, then Suffolk the Rabbanon Lekula, why not apply the Din of Suffolk? And therefore, Tosfos interprets this Gemara as referring to someone who did not make Bittul. And therefore, the Bedika is a Doraisa, because otherwise he's going to violate the Doraisa of Valyura Bayimotze. On a Doraisa level, we have Vadei Chametz. He wasn't Mevatel as Chametz. And now you have a Suffolk to remove that Vadei on a Doraisa level. Then we apply the principle of Ein Suffolk Motze Bidei Vadei. So now the question is the following. I understand Tosfos very well. Ain't Suffolk Motzim de Vade, because the Vade was Doraisa, there was no Bittul. But according to Rashi, that the whole requirement of Bedika here is only Drabbanon, he already made Bittul. So then why ain't Suffolk Motzim de Vade? And we're going to soon see that in a Drabbanan we could say Safik is Motzim Midei Vadei. That's going to be the next sugya. And the impression you get from Rashi is that Bedikas Chometz is different. It's not your classical Drabbanan. The whole enterprise of Bedika is based on the possibility that there is Chometz there. We don't know for sure, you know, from the get-go that when he checks his house, he's going to find Chometz, there is Chometz there. The Rabbanan created a chashash, a possibility that there is chametz there, and based on that chashash, they required bedika. So Rashi is not willing to apply the principle of safek to bedika, even though bedika is the Rabbanan, he already did bittul, because in the case of bedika, the whole essence of the takana and the requirement of bedika was on a safek. If it's predicated on a safek, then we cannot remove and fulfill our requirement of bedika without removing that safek. If you're going to tell me, well, even after I do the bedika, I'm still left with a safek because I don't know if the weasel ate the chametz or not, then you haven't accomplished your goal. The whole goal of bedika is to remove the safek, because the whole establishment of bedika was predicated on a safek. Maybe there's chametz there. If you can convince me that there's no chametz there, which is called a chazaka, you make it into a makom shei machnisim chametz, then you fulfilled your requirement of bedika. But if you're still in doubt because you don't know if the chametz is gone, it went in and it may have come out or it may not have come out, then you haven't fulfilled your requirement of bedika. So whereas Tosus is analyzing this sugya more from a universal perspective, you know, he's looking at Bedika post-Bittel as a classic Derabbanan, and therefore he wants to apply the principles of Safek. Rashi is looking at Bedika as a very unique kind of Derabbanan. It doesn't fit into the universal pattern of Derabbanan, because the whole essence of this Takana was built on a Safek. We never knew from the get-go that there definitely was Chametz. It's all a Chashash that maybe there'll be Chametz. So the Gemara asks the following question. Is it really true? V'ein safek motzi midei vadai? I have a proof, says the Gemara, that really safek is motzi midei vadai. V'atanya, we learned in a braisa, chaver, the word chaver here indicates someone who's trustworthy on maisrus. The average amaretz who is ignorant was not makted on maisrus. But if he was a chaver, it means he was trustworthy on maisers. Now keep in mind, maiser is a double-edged sword, so to speak. Number one, maiser is what we call tevel. So we're talking about an iser. And number two, maiser is a chiyuv, and we're talking about a mitzvah. So when I have tevel, which means that the maiser has not yet been removed, I have a serious iser of a violation of macholos asuris called the iser achilas tevel, a very severe, high-ranking iser, which is called misa b'dei shamayim. And now I have a chiv to be mafresh the maaser, and by being mafresh the maaser, I remove the shame tevel, and I'm allowed by fulfilling my obligation of maaser, I permit the iser tevel. I remove the iser tevel. Now, a person dies, and he's got in his possession, out in his fields, in his storehouses, he's got what's called a goren in modern Hebrew, it ends with an R-Y, something, a granary, is that how you say it?
A silo,
he has a granary full of tvuah. Now, presumably, that tvua is tevel, unless he fulfilled his obligation and he took off maaser. So the answer to this problem, according to the Braisa, is he's a chaver. He's proved it during his lifetime. He proved himself consistently as being reliable in Afroshis Truma. And therefore, we have to assume that whatever he has in storage, in his granary, is also chulin, meaning it's not tevel, it's metukon, it has a tikkun, and it's been fixed up, and the chaver shemes, before he died, he did what he had to do, he fulfilled his obligation. Again, if he's laid up in a hospital for the last month, then maybe that's different. But assuming he was relatively healthy, he was supervising all that went on in his fields, up until the day of his death, then maybe we have a right to assume that he took off trumas and maisus before he died. And that's indeed what this price establishes. Chaver, shemes, v'iniach megura, molea peros, Afilu heim b'nei yomon. Even if we have reason to believe that this tvuah was cut down today, so it's fresh from the fields, nevertheless, harein b'cheskas mitu konin. We could absolutely assume that this chaver took off maser immediately, meaning during the last morning of his life, you know, right after they cut down the maser and everything was ready for hafrasha. Now, what kind of a situation do we have over here? So the Gemara analyzes this. Gemara says, ha-hach, in this case, how could the Braisa rely on the fact that a chaver would have been mafris trumas of maisers? Vadai tevel, honey peri, these fruits, this produce is certainly tevel, there's no question about it. We see that all the processes that are required in order to set up the shame tevel and make it into an isur tevel were in fact fulfilled, which means that the tefuah grew to a mature state, and after that it was cut down. After it was cut down, there was what's called gemar malacha. Does anybody know what gemar malacha is? What's it called?
Taking it
to the front door is going to be the next stage after Gemar Malacha. But what's the Gemar Malacha? Otherwise known as Meiruach. Okay, in fancy English that's called winnowing. So what he does is he does Ksiri, cuts it down. He does Zorah with a hay at the end, and that means winnowing, otherwise known as Meiruach. The wind carries away the chaff. What's left is the kernel of the wheat, and now that's considered Tevel. So we have reason to believe, based on testimony, that everything was set. Meaning there was Gemar, Malacha, there was Beruach, everything was done. That's called Vadai Teva. Now, did the owner fulfill his obligation of Hafrasha? So Gemara says that Sofek Mu'usarim, Sofek Lo Mu'usarim. At the end of the day, there's no one to testify that the owner of the grains actually took off his tithe, you know, his 10% for the levy. We don't know if he was mafrish maser. You could say that he was mafrish maser because he's a reliable fellow, but can anybody testify to the fact that he was mafrish maser? So at the end of the day, you have a suffix. Now you started with the Vadei Tevel. Now you have a suffix whether there was afrashas maser or not. Uka'asi safek, meaning safek mu'usar, umotzi midei vada, and it removes the state of vada, which means that you're allowed to eat this tefuah, you don't need a hafrasha, and safek is motzi midei vada. If that be the case, applying that principle to chametz, even if you had a vada, it's like the vadai tevel, you have the vadai chametz, because we saw the weasel going in with the chametz, but nevertheless, just like in Tevel, we have the Sofek, maybe he was Mafrish Maser, and that's going to remove the Isur Tevel. So too, the Sofek of maybe the animal consumed the Chametz is going to be enough to remove the Isur, to remove the Vadai. So does Sofek have the power to counter a Vadai, to neutralize a Vadai? Well, Rava said no. The Sufik is not as powerful as a Vadai, and it can't be Matir or Nisar Vadai. So you don't know if the animal ate the Chametz or didn't. And yet, we have a Braisa with regard to Vadai Maser, and the assumption is that the Chaver may have taken off Maser. That's called a Sufik. And that Sufik is Motzim Idei Vadai. We're allowed to rely on that Sufik to change our Vadai from before and be matir the tvuah. So let's be matir the chametz or the bedika and the bayis based on the suffix that maybe the animal ate the chametz. So at this point, Rabosai, in the Gemara's development, the premise is that we're going to analyze the chaver and the question of whether the chaver indeed was mafrish maser before he died under the laws of statistical probability, and we're left at the end of the day with a suffix. Now, at this point in the sugya, the Gemara doesn't upgrade the status of a chaver to a new status. It should be analyzed and treated like any other, you know, what we call probability theory. And a probability theory, I'm going to call, again, this is a word I'm using, I don't know if it's technically correct or not, but stomma. Stomma de milsa. Stomma de milsa means that, you know, we have a right to make certain assumptions. That's the way people do it. It's normal behavior. In the Gemara Chulin, it's called a ruba de lesa kamon. Ruba de lesa kamon means we can't exactly prove this rov. You know, most people do it this way. You know, let's say most yeshiva bachurim wear a black hat. You know, that would be a ruba de lesa kamon. Most hezegers wear a kippah suga, a knitted yarmulke. You know, most people pick up a chalif knife and they shecht an animal. They know something about shechita. Yeah, that's the way people behave. Any kind of a rove that's based on normal behavior pattern in a given society, in a given situation, that's called a ruba de lesa kamon. It's not built into nature. You know, there's something called a ruba de isa kamon, where I see the rove in front of my eyes. You know, I can test it out and prove to you that most women give birth after 9 months, not after 7 months. And in the case of a Bezdin, I can count the number of people who voted in favor as opposed to the dissenting view, which is the minority. That's a ruba. That's a rove where it's tangible. You can see it in front of your eyes. But then there's a general kind of rove. You know, this is the way people normally do things, and you know it's logical that this would happen. You know, most probably on any given winter day in Manchester, England, it rains. You know, I can tell you that from my limited experience in Manchester. I was there for a number of days. I did not see anything but rain, you know, during the winter. So that could be a ruba de isa kamon, by the way, because maybe the meteorologist can prove to you that that's what it's built into nature. But just a behavior pattern, that's called a mistoma de milsa. I assume that this is the way it happened. You know, why would a person act differently? You know, I don't want to say he woke up that morning on the wrong side of the bed. So we have a certain behavior pattern. That's called stoma de milsa. So at this point in the Gemara thinks that stoma de milsa, to the extent that it applies to a chaver who left behind him a magura malea peros, and, you know, let's assume that he was mafrish before he died, he was mataka in the peros, that's called a stoma de milsa. It's still a suffix. You know, we really don't know for sure. You know, maybe on that day he wasn't feeling so well, so he, you know, there's reason to doubt whether he was mafrish. So the Gemara calls that a suffering. And the answer to the Gemara is going to make a radical move here about what the status of a chaver is. We're not talking about normal behavior pattern. We're not talking about second guessing what he would have done and what he probably would have done and leave it as a suffering. We're going to have to change it because, again, we have to defend Rava. If you can assume that there's nothing actually pressing, there's nothing built into nature that would tell you that the chulda is going to eat every last morsel of bread over here, and it consumed a lechem, it's just kind of a mistoma de milsa, and therefore Rava says we have to check the house because we can't rely on a mistoma de milsa against the rove, because your suffix now has to be motzi b'day the rove. The rove tells you that this chametz there and you're chayven b'dika, and that's the status of the house, it requires b'dika. Now you're telling me, well, most probably in behavior, you know, we can discuss with the animal psychologist and assume that the chulda consumed the thing. Okay, says Rava, that's a very nice assumption on your part, but you still left with a suffix. There's nothing absolutely machai of the rov. You know, there's nothing that's built in to assume that this is what the Torah would assume. It's just sort of like an amorphous general ruba de lesa kamon, a stoma de milsa. So the Gemara now makes the following analogy. Well, if a mistoma de milsa is not considered a rove, and a mistoma de milsa still leaves you in doubt in the dark as a suffix, then how can we rely on this chaver and assume that mistoma de milsa probably was mafish masa when you started with the vada? You knew it was tema. And you're going to now come with a mistoma de milsa and make this assumption. You're still within the parameters of a suffix. You haven't left a suffix. You know, imagine there was a house that said, the title on the house would say, Beis HaSofek. You're still in the Beis HaSofek. The Achronim very often, Rav Shimon Shkalp and others use that term, Beis HaSofer. You're still the Beis HaSofer. You still don't know for sure. You have a kind of a rove, a kind of behavior of mistone. That's the way it usually works, but you're not sure. So you know, Rava's in trouble now. That's what the Gemara claims. How could Rava, who says that we're not going to rely on the mistome in the case of the chulva, we're going to require bedika, a second round of bedika? How could he justify the fact that we're allowed to eat from these peros and assume that there was a tikkun, there was afrasha, based on the mistama that the chaver would not want to leave around, fruits without a tikkun in the state of teva? So the Gemara now has to change its understanding. The Gemara says that Hassam, the case of the Chaver, is different. Why? It's Vadayu Vadayu. We're not talking about some sort of amorphous assumption of behavior pattern that he probably was mafresh maser. It's a vaday that he was mafresh maser. De vaday maasre. Why? Kid Rabbi Chanina Chuzo, the Yom Rabbi Chanina Chuzo, Chazaka al Chaver, She'eno Motzi Mitachas Yodo, Dover She'eno Mesukon. I would emphasize the word Chazaka. Chazaka is much more than a mistama. There's something called a mistama that's based on, patterns of behavior.
Certainty.
Right? But it doesn't create certainty. Then you have something called chazaka, and chazaka is already a whole different concept. Chazaka creates certainty. That's the very essence of the word chazaka. The translation of the word chazaka means vadai. It creates a vadai. And that means that in order to remove or question that chazok, you're going to have to come up with some sort of absolute evidence which is totally reliable and certainly removes that chazok. If you don't have absolute evidence to the contrary, then we have absolute evidence. The chazok itself is absolute evidence. So if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says the following. Vaday Tvili, this is the second of the wide lines. He says, "Came the Nigmar Malachton v'roy pnei abayis chalav shem tevel aleihem b'shasharot sofek isran chaver zeh sofek lo isran v'yase sofek u'motzi aperes halol midei vaday." Says the Gemara, "No, hasam vadayu. In the case of the chaver, it's a vaday. Ki hecha the pshitle, to the same extent that you know for sure that tvile maker, that it was originally tevel, hachinami so to pshitle, and we know with certainty the asrinu that he took off the maser. Vi ein gimgum, don't stutter about it." Stuttering here means, probably kind of thing, mumble bumble. This is not a rove that's based on some sort of a psychological analysis of behavior, of general behavior patterns. No. El chazoka vadois. Look how Rashi has that word vadois. And then here's the punchline. Al kol hachaverim. Rashi says there's no exception to this rule. Every chaver is included in this chazoka vadois. Now, I'm going to throw out a word here that might explain Rashi. I don't know. Again, it's not fair on my part to add a word to Rashi. But there's something called ne'emonus. Ne'emonus means that if I invite you to my house to eat, you don't have to question the kashrus of the food. I have ne'emonus. I am reliable. A woman tells her husband she went to the mikveh. He doesn't have to be bodek, and he has to ask, "Well, give me a written document from the woman in charge of the mikveh that she can testify." Every person, insofar as they are reliable in a certain area of halacha, is called a neman. He's believed, and that neman is in isurim is absolute. Again, in dini momentus, how many witnesses do we need in monetary law? Two, not less than two. But in Isur, all we need is one reliable witness. So if I tell you that I know this is kosher, you can rely on my testimony. For example, in Shechita, who's going to testify that the Shechita was done properly? Only the Shochet himself, but we rely on him. That's called Eid Echad Nem Bisurim. In Isurim, a person is believed, one witness is enough, and that's all we need. Could be that what Rashi means when he says, Chazok of Ados al Kolach Averim, al Kolach Averim She, what was the last word? Shetiknu? Oh, he doesn't even answer Tiknu. Okay. That it's a chazok on all the chaverim. He means to say that when the chaver allows this tvua to be accessible, he's testifying that there already was hafroshes, trumas, and masters. And then manas creates a vadai. So that's why Rashi has the word kol achaverim. In other words, by definition, if you're a chaver, it means that you're trustworthy, you're reliable, and anything that leaves your hand, so to speak, meaning it's in the silo already, then anyone could come along and eat it. You've placed it out there in a place that's accessible to the public. That itself is an act of testimony on your behalf. And you have nemanos. That applies to every single chaver. Who's ever in the category of chaver, and we classify him as a chaver because he's proven himself in the past, then you have nemanos. This is a whole different category. It's a vadai category. It's not based on statistics, and it's not based on rov and miut. Leave all that out. It creates a vadai because the Torah says a person has nemanos. Gershon, did you want to say something? The word chazoka, says Rashi, is a vadai. Don't confuse this chazoka, says Rashi, with your classical chazoka. Your classic chazoka might be, in most cases, it might be predicated on assumptions. Says Rashi, no. This is a vadois. And why is it a vadois definite? Because kol ha-chaverim, all the chaverim are relied upon when it comes to hafroshes mas. That's what it means to be a chaver. And if we're relying on you, then you have nemanus, you have credibility, and the Torah says that that's okay. So let's understand now what goes on. The Gemara is making a fundamental difference between Rava's case, which is the Diuk of our Gemara from the Mishnah, that he saw the Chulda going in with Chametz, and maybe the Chametz was eaten by the weasel, maybe it wasn't. That's called Ein Sofek Motzim Devadin Yischaivim B'dik. As opposed to the case where the Chaver died and he left Tevel, we know that it was Tevel, maybe he was Mafrish, and the Gemara is saying no. It's not maybe he was Mafrish. He's telling us he was Mafrish. By the very fact that he's a Chaver and he leaves the Peros, as I say, accessible to anyone, that means he's testifying that there was Afrashas Chumas and Maestras. That's a whole different story. The Chulda is not testifying in front of a Bezdin, I ate the Chametz, last I knew. Okay. So Rabosai, let's go back for a moment to the case, the Mishnah in Olos that we started with today, of Madoros Akum. Do you remember that in the case of Madoros Akum, we do rely on the Chulda? The Chulda becomes reliable, not Nemanus, obviously, but it's enough to remove the chashash of Tumay of Nefel. So Rava said, because you know what? We don't even know for sure, right, from the get-go, Meikara, we don't know that there was an Nefel there. So since you were in the category of a Suffolk, I can add another Suffolk. And that is Emer Achalte, Emer Lo Achalte. And based on the fact that I put one suffix against the other, I'm able to be matir maduris akum b'makom sheish chazim chulda ubardlus mitzuyim shom. So Tosis points out that lechora, this mission in Olos contradicts the most fundamental halach in Tuma v'tara, as far as Sfeikus is concerned. We have, and this is a Gemara in Sota, we have a fundamental distinction between what's called a Rishus HaYochid and a Rishus HaRab. If we find something that's Safek Tomei in Rishus HaRabim, then it's Mutter. Even one single Safek. In the case of Rishus HaYochid, in a private area, then no matter how many Sfeikas you pile on, one on top of the other, it's always us. It's always Tomei. The Tosis is now the following. You know that there's something called Maduris Akum.
Chachamim were afraid there's an Eifel there. What kind of Rishus are we talking about? Rishus HaYachid. Now you're going to tell me, well, maybe the Chulda ate the Nefel, but that's only a Safek. In Rishus HaYachid, no matter how many Sfekas you pile on one or the other, they're all Lichumer, they're all Tomei. The Imtomer, take a look at the fourth Tosis on your page. V'hamaduras ha'akum Rishus HaYachid emu t'nabe v'sekas taros kol makum shata yachal la'arvel Sfekas, 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 Rishus HaYachid Tomei. No matter how many myriads of Sfekas, you can pile one on top of the other. And each suffix tells you, well, maybe it's not Tomei. We're always going to assume it's Tomei. And why? Because of this, shall I say, Xeris HaKos, of this mechanical, fundamental principle in Tumah V'Tahara, that no matter how many Sfekas you have, one on top of the other, suffix and Svek Sfeka and Sfeki Sfeki Sfeka, it's always going to be Tomei in Rishus HaYachid. This case of Aduras Akum, by definition, is Rishus HaYachid. What good is it to say that maybe the weasel would have eaten up the nephel? That's only a suffix. So now, in order to answer this question, Tosis introduces a new concept. And that's called suffix beer. Okay then? Suffix beer. Tosis says that in any case of a suffix Rishus HaYachid, and then we're going to activate the principle of kol sfeka shatari chol laharbos kulam tmeim, that's only because there's one premise. And that premise is vadai, is certain. And that's called bia. So we know that a sheretz went in there. We know that a mess entered into the building. And now we don't know what happened subsequently. Did you come in contact with the mess? Was the mess a full shear? You know, did it have a shear of Kadasha, whatever the shear are, you know, the Revius Domina mess, and so forth and so on. Was the mess removed? You can ask many, many different questions. They're all Tomei. Because you have a Vadei Bia. Meaning you know that Tuma went in there. Once you know that Tuma went into this Rishus HaYachid, it's ball game over. From now on, you can give me one suffix after the other. It's always going to be Tomei. In Yiddish, we have a phrase, as mefrech the shayla is treif. You familiar with that? Right. Any shayla you ask, the Rav is going to always tell you it's treif. So with regard to Tuma, any question you ask about Rishus HaYachid, it's always treif. It's always Tomei. But says Tosfos, that's only because, as the Mishnah establishes in Masechta Taharos, because you know that there was bia, you know that Tuma was taken into that. However, then we have something called Suffolk Bia. Suffolk Bia means we have a Suffolk on the very existence of the mess. We don't know if the mess ever went in there. Was there ever Tumah that went into the house, into the Rishus HaYachid? Ah, then we apply the principle of Suffolk Lekula, Suffolk Letara. Says Tosfos, our case of Masechta Olos, of Maduras Akum, is a classical case of Suffolk Bia. We don't know that there was an Eifel there to begin with. Is there anyone here who can testify that there was an Eifel buried under the ground? And then it becomes Suffolk Bia. We don't know if there was ever Tumah in this house. So it's just like, once it gets Tumah, any Suffolk that you'll ask and you raise questions about that Tumah, it's always going to be trafe. It's always going to be Tumah. It's like, you know, those guys who learn how to play tennis. So they go to this thing, and you know what I mean? What is called that machine that keeps pitching the balls, right? So whatever ball you pitch at me, I'm always going to answer Tomei. That's the only word I know. Why? Because I have a Vadei Bia. But if there was a Suffolk Bia to begin with, then we don't apply the principle of Kol Sveika Sashatir Kol Harkas Kulim Tomei. That's the first answer to Tosfos. Yesh Lomer Delo Domi Ha Sveika L'Shar Sveiki. Our case of Aduris Akum is fundamentally different than all other cases of Suffolk Tumrish Sayyoch. The Amai Islam Lememar Shehebo Nefel. Who convinced you that there was a Nefel there to begin with? The Dummy was Suffolk Beer. It's as if you had a Suffolk from the get go whether there was ever Tumah in that place. Maybe there was never Tumah there. Maybe the Sheretz never went in there. And in such a case, we apply the principle of Suffolk Tom. Now, why do we apply the principle of Suffolk Tahar? I mean, this is not a case of Rishus HaRavim, but the answer is
that everything is assumed to be Torah until proven guilty. Innocent, it means there's a cheskes tahara, right? We don't know that a mess went in there. So the status quo is tahara, unless you know otherwise. So the Rabbanim made a gzera. They said, you know what? Let's be afraid that maybe there's an eifel there. In that case, what the Rabbanim is saying is we're going to create a suffix where there is no suffix. Why? Because as far as suffix bia is concerned, when you don't know that the tumev went in there, the halacha says it's always tar. That a suffix bia doesn't have the power to remove your original cheskas tara. The Rabbanan said the following, that we're not going to rely on the cheskas tara because we have a strong reason to believe that maybe there was an eifel. We're going to create from a suffix bia, we're going to create an assumption that there's bia, that there was an eifel brought in and it was buried in that house. Ah, so Rabbanan said, if we're creating this suffix, give me a suffix to counter my suffix. If there's no chulda, then the navel is still there. It's buried deep below the surface. But if there's a chulda there, the chulda digs up and takes out the mess, consumes the navel, and the tumor that went in went out again. That becomes a suffix who's suffix. Inam, he says, Tosa, I have a second answer. Eimor achalte odif bishar sveikos. The suffik haragil hu v'kar of levade. Wow. Tosa sets up a very, very fundamental distinction here. And this, by the way, has tremendous repercussions for anyone who's learning Yoredeya and preparing to be tested for smicha. Tosis says that there are two categories of roves. He says one is a rove that's a classic rove, and then there's a rove that's called a ragil, and then there's something called a rove that's karov levadai. What does it mean, karov levadai? You know, when you talk about statistics, you can talk about different kind of mutes of probability theory. You can talk about 90 versus 10, 70 versus 30, or you can talk about 99 versus 1. If you have 99 versus 1, and again, we may have room for expansion beyond 1%, I'm giving you that example, then it becomes what's called, again, I should really make a little bit more room here. It becomes what's called a mute she'eno matzui. This is a fundamental concept in Yoredeya, in the laws of Issa V'Het. Every mute has to be analyzed under the microscope as one of two categorizations. It's a mute hamatsu. It means, you know, there's a certain, it's a minority, but it's a certain serious probability. A certain, you know, if they tell you to go for a certain procedure in medicine, you know, they have to tell you what are the statistical, you know, possibilities of danger and failure and so forth and so on. And they'll tell you, you know what? One out of five people will not survive this surgery. That's a mir hamatz. One out of five. That's a serious danger. And then there's something called a mir she'eno matz. You know, one out of 100. Where did I have this just recently? I had a case of 1 out of 100. Oh yeah. In the case of childbirth, this, I don't know what it's called in medicine, but the structure of the skull could be off, and they have to do surgery to correct it. And I was told that the probability of such a thing, again, I don't know the name of the condition, is 1 in 100. 1 out of every 100 babies needs this correction. That's already a mi'ud she'eino matzui. So the Vilna Gaon, in his introduction to Yoredeya, analyzes these two mutes from the perspective of Shechita. You know, that the beginning of Yoredeya is the laws of Shechita. So Vilna Gaon wants to know, if you have a Shochet, you haven't tested him,
and you're relying on Rove, that probably he knows what he's doing, because Rove Mitzuyin et Shechita Mumchin, and he's an expert. So the Vilna Gaon analyzes, he comes over the Machlok Shin the Ra'o and the Rashba, this question as to whether or not the mute, you know, the one in, so forth and so on, whatever that number is, are people who, with great chutzpah, take up a chalif, you know, they shech the cat, the animal, they never learned the laws of, well, they never tested, they're not pekiyim. So the Gaon says, based on the psak of the Shulchan Aruch, that that mute of people who would be such, you know, fit that category, that description, and go ahead and shech an animal they don't know, is a mute she'eno matzui. And if it's a mute she'eno matzui, we don't have to worry about it at all. Which means that even if the Shulchan is in front of us, we don't even have to test him, says the Gaon. We don't have to send him to the local shul, you know, Shulchan Ubodek, and have him fahered, have him tested. Why? Because this miyut is a miyut chain of matzah. And basically, what the Gaon wants to say is that when you talk about Rove, and you, as we mentioned before, you know, the question is, are you still in the Beis HaSofek? As we, you remember, I give you that picture of a house, you know, with a sign on it that says Beis HaSofek on it. So does Rove remove the Beis HaSofek? Are you out in the clear? You know, you're out in certainty. And the answer is, it depends on what kind of miyut you have. If the miyut is matzui, there's a 20% possibility that it, you know, that the Rove is in this case is unreliable. Then you're still in the Beis HaSofek. You're still within the confines or the or the ambiance of a suffix. If it's a mute, she'eno matzui, it's a 1 in 100 chance, that percentage doesn't undermine the vados, and therefore you're out of the Beis HaSofek. So let's see if we can apply this to the case of Madoras Akum. In the first answer, Tosa wants to say that a Madoras Akum means that we don't know whether there was an Eiffel there to begin with, right? You know, the whole premise of Tumah Bereshus HaYachid here, in this case Madoras Akum, is predicated on the assumption that there was an Eiffel there. We don't know if there was an Eiffel there to begin with. In the second answer, Tosa wants to say that the Chazaka and the assumption that if there's a Chulda, Chazir, etc., there, that they would have consumed or removed this Eiffel. That, he says, is not a Sofek HaRagil. It's not a Rove that fits into your classic Rove, and maybe he ate it, maybe he didn't eat it, but rather it's Karv Levadai. Karv Levadai means that there's no Miyut Matzah. It's a Miyut She'eno Matzah. And if it's a Miyut She'eno Matzah of a Chulda that has the opportunity to devour this Nefel and doesn't do so, that's not even something to be considered. The Halach in such case bridges the gap between Rove and Vadai. So therefore, according to the first Teretz and Tosa, we actually still have a Sofek over here. But since it's a Cheskes Tara, then we're going to apply the principle of Ein Sofek Motzi Midei Chazaka, and therefore it's Tar. So even though the Chazir is really just a Sofek, we don't know that the Chazir will be hungry on that day and consume and devour this Nefel. But nevertheless, we begin with a Sofek, and we never had a Vadei Bia to begin with. We don't activate the principle of Rishus HaYachid as far as Tumah. That's the first answer of Tosfos. The second answer of Tosfos says, no, you're missing the boat over here. You're missing the point. The assumption that the Chazir would have eaten up the Nefel is not a Sofek. We're out of the Beis HaSofek here. It's a Vada. And why is a Vada, he says? It's not like a Sofek a Rogil, which you'd say is, let's say, 60-40 or 80-20, whatever the numbers are, but here it's Karav Levada. And if it's Karav Levadai, then we apply the principle of Vadai Motzi Midei Sofek. Okay, Rabosa, I think our time has passed. So let's just make a note of where we got up to, so that we'll pick this up tomorrow. The Gemara tomorrow is going to start with, just one second, we did that. So we're up to the Ibayis Ema, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines up before the end of the Amud. And in event that I don't remember, you'll tell me, okay? I'm going to rely on you. Everyone should have a great day.